Oh, there, Nelly. oi, oi! David, let down your hair so that I may climb your Scottish-rooted stair and speak to you too and find out about you. And oh, just how audio tales you create to make folks wow.
You what?
Gosh, you high up there and your see-through glass balcony of electric pianos. Ah, nice kilt. It's rather cold today, huh?
It's windy up here, yes.
Would you let down your hair?
Please?
Please.
Manners are everything.
Indeed. And if it's not a personal question, David, would you mind letting me up your tower?
Yes.
Oh, I won't make a mess.
Yes, you will. And you can stop the terrible accent, please. It's insulting and it's awful.
Oh, yeah, sorry, David. Do we have to keep shouting? I don't think I can do the whole interview like this, you see.
Sorry, I may have forgotten that we were supposed to be shouting. Sorry.
And it wasn't even in the stage directions. How would you know?
Sorry. Yeah, roll into it. It's good. Don't do it like this, then. Do it.
Like that.
Walkie-talkies. Cool. You are so wise. Okay, so...
How can I get up your tower, so to speak, to you in person for NDAF?
You really want to come up here from down there?
Okay, wait now.
I know what you're doing. Okay, I know my place. Are we using this terribly written schedule and metaphor that are differing levels of indie successes?
No, less is more, Sarah, and there's already been too much of this sketch. You really do need a better
edit. You're not joking there, and I am very happy to receive any help in this regard. If you can help, please ping quirkyvoices@gmail.com.
For what it's worth, we're all striving, even those with what you deem as, air quotes, success.
I really want air quotes success, David.
Really? Then have it. You, air quotes, shall, brackets magical sound. I have unleashed the portal, so you may climb.
Portal? Where? How?
All the right questions. Good. See that laptop embedded in the crumbling sandstone of the wall?
I didn't see that before.
Ah, all the better to demonstrate the power of a bad, bad slice of exposition in audio fiction. You have the audacity, I feel, to open it up and use the magical door to get up here. From down there, it just needs knowledge and sharing. Lesson one of being part of a good, strong community.
So the door is a door? Oh, whoa! It's sucking me in!
That's what a good audio drama does, Sarah! Top tip and lesson two, done! See you in a mo for lesson three, starting things in the middle of the action. You really must learn to do this, you know, not all this build-up to the story nonsense.
Yes, we should have started here with a flashback, huh?
Good, you're learning.
Can my horse come too?
No! Wipe your feet as you enter. Don't let the door bang you on the butt on the way in.
Throughout history and folklore, there have been many Davids of note.
Sorry. Some slew giants. Some were star men waiting in the sky. Some were doctors of a whovian nature. But one is legend in any audio drama loving musical genius Tin Can Alley. No dungeon economic model will keep this talent middle below. No, this tower of a creative is here today in love and wards. Well, wards, words. Yes, it's the fantabulously talented, non-binary, they-them noise wizard, David Devereaux! Woohoo!
Thank you. That was an incredibly kind introduction. That was amazing.
But you are glorious and should be celebrated. Everyone should lift you aloft and parade your talent so that they may somehow glean some of it for themselves.
Thank you.
But no, welcome to NDAF. You're somebody on the gloriously burgeoning landscape now who I feel is just someone everyone should listen to. So big questions first.
Yes.
What do you feel is the state of the audio fiction today? What's it like being in the thick of it, making, doing, and being employed for coinage even, which we all dream of?
I mean, for me, it's quite strange because I'm in a very fortunate position in that the majority of, like, so I now work in audio full time. I'm very lucky in that regard.
Yes,
but the majority of the majority of my work is for other people's podcasts now, and also doing kind of nonfiction stuff for kind of corporate podcasts and things as well, which has been good because it means that it's left me space to work on my own stuff and not have to worry about, you know, executives or meeting deadlines or anything. I can just kind of do my own thing, which I'm very aware is incredibly lucky, and I'm very privileged to be in that position.
Well, it's taken some hard work to get here.
I mean, it's taken
right?
a while, yes. I only went freelance full time at the start of this year, so it's still an ongoing journey, I think. In terms of the space as a whole, I think it's in a really, really fantastic place. It seems like there are hundreds of new shows coming out every week, and all of them are incredible. Like, it's been very strange seeing new shows come in and then kind of being referred to as an elder. That's a very strange experience.
And you're only 22.
not quite anymore.
Inside.
I wouldn't even go that far. I don't think I'm older inside. Anyway, it's been wonderful seeing this kind of new wave of shows come in, these new waves of creators coming in the UK and also everywhere else as well.
Yes, true.
Like, I have missed the in-person meetups that used to happen down in London, and I'm kind of hoping for them to come back so I can kind of make the pilgrimage down from Glasgow and meet so many of these wonderful people, because I know there's been a few and I've just not been able to make them. Yeah. And there's some fantastic new shows coming out and some fantastic new voices in the space.
Yes.
And it's been wonderful to see in the last 2 years, just seeing it kind of explode.
Mm, I agree. And yes, I think I was lucky enough to meet you at one of the London events. And I think just saw you almost slow motion running to meet some very groovy people who are friends of yours and greeting them with the biggest, happiest smile ever. So, yeah. I think.
I'm trying to remember. Was that London Podcast Festival?
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah.
It must have been.
Because I remember, I think, because we kind of came in, I think I sat down like in the sort of upstairs bit of King's Place and then just looked up and there you were. Like, we were just, I'd accidentally sat across from you, I think.
Those were the days.
We could have conventions and things. It was great.
Oh, I want more podcasters to accidentally sit across from me. So that's not putting myself forward too much. But yeah, I think that's the whole thing of it, is that did you ever, in a way, think of that making tin can on your own in your own house would lead to making, I don't know, the theme for the Doctor Who Redacted and the sound score for so many beautiful things on that groovy adventure? I mean, how can we chart this rise from your original storytelling to someone who's really wanted for quality audio prowess across the board? What have you done? How have you done it? What's your secret? Tell us.
Well, I mean, like, so first of all, no, like I didn't, when I started, like I kind of initially made Tin Can as kind of like a tech demo, being like, look what I can do with sound design. Yeah. Give me a job.
Yes.
It's taken 5 or 6 years, but I got it. I think when I started making stuff, it was I didn't know there was a community out there. I didn't know there was a scene. I didn't know it was something that at the time was becoming more of a staple and something that people actually wanted to listen to.
Yeah.
So I came from doing sound and music on films and like independent, you know, zero budget short films in Scotland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
indie scenes of
yes,
all mediums.
Yeah.
Quite frankly.
Still, it's not getting any money there either. I think that the problem that I was having though was that I think, at least in Scotland, at least most of the sound design for independent short films is kind of fixing audio that wasn't recorded properly. I was also the sound recordist, so I can't be like too angry. I was still learning how to do stuff. When I put the first episode of Tin Can out, I did not have any intention to make that my career. I was just kind of, I was still trying to make it as a musician. I was just sort of like, I want to make something that kind of shows what I can do, and then see if that leads anywhere. So I don't really know if there was a certain thing that I did. I think it was more just I had a lot of previous knowledge and a lot of equipment already, just because I'd spent, you know, a lot of time up until that point learning how to make music and produce music and come at it from that angle. So it meant when it came to making audio drama, I already had the equipment, I already had the knowledge, it was kind of already there.
And the talent for storytelling, obviously, through sound, which, you know, you can't easily teach someone, I don't think. I think there has to be some innate desire to be able to convey story in such a beauteous manner, especially through audio, I do feel.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think, I don't know where that came from, to be honest. Like, I listened to a lot of radio growing up, and I kind of...
Yeah.
And I just spent a lot of time being part of a film team that had some very talented storytellers, and we used to do the 48-hour film challenge. Oh. So I learned how to tell a good story very quickly and how to make something very quickly that kind of worked.
Amazing.
So I think it was just absorbing a lot of stories and things. And I think one of the big influences for me is video games, and video games kind of, they tell stories in a sort of non-linear way, but also you're kind of telling a story in a different way, in that like you're trying to convey images that necessarily the graphics or the actual game is not conveying. You have to do it through the story, through words and through the narrative. And I think I just absorbed a lot of that as well, and then that all just sort of came pouring out when I started writing things.
Oh, I love that. And if we were to try and like let's get baking into this audio nonfiction chat, I would love you to, if you may, define a good recipe for fantastic or inspiring audio fiction with regards to, you know, 100 grams of whatever, a kilo of whatever. What do we need to make good audio fiction, do you feel, in your experience?
I think you need to have a lot of patience. I think that, I mean, but I feel like that's true of baking as well in real life.
Yes.
I think the kind of ingredients, I think you need a script, you need sound design, you need music, you need voice acting. And I think if you can get all of them to be good, that's fantastic. But even if you start with a script that you're not 100% sure about, it will change as you go through, as you go through the process of making it. Like that was something I learned from filmmaking. It was that, you know, the script doesn't have to be, you know, 100% locked, 100% perfect before you go to record, because, you know, actors will change lines that just be like, oh, this doesn't quite work. Or, you know, you'll hear something out loud, you'll hear something being read, and you'll kind of go, oh, that doesn't actually work how I thought it would. Let me try and fix that. Mm-hmm. And then even after that, once you've kind of got the what I'm going to term as like the lower half of the cake. I'm not very good at baking. I don't know what the technical terms are. The cake mix, and then you've put it in a tin, and then you're putting it in the oven. Like, it can change again there as well. Like, there's been so many things that I've made where they've completely changed in the editing process.
Yeah.
You know, like the Tower started out as a script. It was just going to be a standard audio drama, and then it became a concept album, and then it kind of became an audio drama again. And then, but that all happened in the edit. Like, the edit was kind of going through and going, right, what is this? What is this going to be? And then it kind of finding its voice in the edit. And I think that's true of a lot of stuff that I make, and that like it doesn't quite work until it gets to the editing stage, which I'm aware is not really sustainable, especially if people are like giving you money to make things.
But it seems to work so far, right?
I mean, so far it only has to go wrong once, though, you know. Explodes in the oven.
It's not allowed to. You're doing brilliant stuff. I mean, yeah, let's just talk on The Tower for a moment, because you just said it's also been described as a concept album, and has also actually inspired, you know, other people to muse on their own practice and the importance of music in storytelling too. It was a wonderful article from Catherine Seaton, which I don't know if you saw. It's glorious. And is this sort of a new hybrid of storytelling, or do you feel that this kind of thing has always been around? I mean, Is it audio drama now, would you say? Or is each season so far very different?
I think in terms of, I don't think it's necessarily a new hybrid. I think it was definitely inspired from listening to things like Jeff Wayne's War of the Worlds growing up. and listening to that, and I definitely wanted to do something along those lines, like have something with lots of me. And also, like, I grew up, you know, listening to prog rock, and I'm still a massive sort of prog rock fan, and I've always liked the idea of the concept album of, you know, the you've got this set of music, but it tells a story, but it's not a musical, you know. It's more about moods and tones and kind of getting the audience to think about certain things in a certain way, and I loved that, and I kind of wanted to experiment with that. So I don't necessarily think it's new. I think it's maybe a sort of variation on the idea of a concept album, on a concept album or as audio drama. Mm-hmm. I think I came into the space with a focus on music.
Yes.
Because I think it's something that, this is true of a lot of artistic mediums. It's not necessarily just audio drama, but I do think that music gets neglected a little bit, or it's kind of an afterthought, or it's sort of folded into the sound design process.
Sure.
I think as a result, it doesn't quite, it can often just sort of, you know, you hear a lot of the same music from the same public domain sites, and again, nothing wrong with that. Like, making stuff is expensive, and if you can find something that works, go for it. But I kind of, what interests me about audio fiction is that I don't think it's quite got a musical vocabulary yet.
Sure.
I think a lot of the time it's taking from film music, or to a slightly lesser extent, and again, this is probably more me than anything else, video game music. And there have been some fantastic podcast musicals.
Yes.
But I think, again, they're sort of trying to do stage musicals. They're just doing them in an audio format.
Interesting.
Whereas something like...
Hit the Bricks? No. Ballad of Anna Mary? In Strange Woods.
In Strange Woods, yes. Whereas an example like In Strange Woods, I think what makes In Strange Woods so good is that it's a musical that takes a podcast format and uses that as the starting point.
Yes, and there is a big difference, isn't there? Which, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, like taking something that, you know, you have to listen to it in a podcast for it to really get the full effect. And I think that's kind of what I'm interested in doing with music and podcasting. Because I'm coming at music for audio drama from a, you know, it's going to sound weird, a music perspective, like a contemporary music perspective. So yeah, and I think with each part of the tower, I'm kind of coming at it from a different angle. Like the first time it was just, let's make something ambient, and then for part two it was, right, let's make something a bit more, slightly more experimental, slightly bigger, and then for part three, which we're in the process of making, it's going to be a bit more kind of analog and a bit more experimental. But I don't want to say this is what we're doing for part three, because we're still making it, and from experience it changes, you know, as soon as we get it into the edit, as soon as we start actually making stuff for it, it changes.
That cake's turning blue as we speak. Yeah, no.
Yes, exactly. just inflating to a slightly concerning size. But yeah, I think music is at the forefront of my process when I'm making a new story. If I have an idea for a new story, one of the first things I'll sort of think about is, well, what does the music sound like?
Mm-hmm.
So the music kind of comes in before the recording. It comes in after the writing, but before the recording process. So it's starting it really early on in the process.
So identity through music then, if there's people listening going, yeah, that's how I work, that's what I want to do that, but I don't know where to start, what would you suggest they do?
I think just kind of you make it work your own way. I mean, for the tower, that started out as scripts, and then it was putting music in, and then kind of experimenting with it that way. And I think that's kind of the process that we've been doing throughout. I don't think I've ever started with the music for a project. I think it depends on, if you're a musician, it depends on how you write music, because I think everybody writes differently. I think if you, you know, I think if you're, if you write lyrics and you kind of do it that, you know, it's a, you know, you have a guitar or a piano and you play chords and then you come up with lyrics for that. If that's a good creative place for you to start, like, do it that way. You've just kind of got to work out how best you make music, yeah, or how you make stories, and then trying to sort of crowbar them together a little bit.
So can I ask, so you sat in front of your script with all your amazing equipment around you to start the tower. Can you remember the first sort of things you did to make things spring to what they now have become?
Well, the thing, I think, I can't remember if I had some music ready before we recorded, but I remember there was one specific thing where I'd written a piece of music. I think it was actually before we recorded, because I don't think we recorded it yet.
Okay.
But Katrina Allen, who plays the lead character in the tower, was over, and I kind of said, "Well, I've got this piece of music that I think is going to be the main theme." Mm-hmm. Played it for her, and she was kind of like, "I'm not 100% sure this is what you're going for. I'm not 100% sure this is going to work," oh, which was the right thing to say. Like, that was the absolute right thing. And then I think it wasn't until I started putting the recordings into project files that I kind of started going, "Oh," and actually hearing the voices and getting the tone from
Melodics.
Yeah, and kind of getting the tone from the performances, because I think when we were recording it, I didn't have an idea of what the music would sound like then. I kind of, there were lots of disparate ideas floating around, and then once I started listening to the recording sessions, that was when I kind of thought, "Oh, right, okay, I know what we're doing here," and then going from there. I had lots of, you know, different references and things, being like, "Well, I really like this. I kind of want to maybe make something a bit like this, or I maybe want to make something a bit like this." And I think letting stuff incubate is very important.
Right.
This is something that both my partner and I have, my partner is a filmmaker, have really learned in the past few years, is when you have an idea, letting it incubate, letting it just sit in your brain and letting it work itself out. Before you start trying to put it on paper or you know, edit it together or start playing stuff. I think,
love it.
Have it.
So what you're saying is we all need to go on more holidays to have more think time. Is that what I'm reading? Is that what I need to do?
I mean, I would say yes. I mean, I'm always going to say yes to more holidays, but like, I think it's
break it down a bit.
I'm not even saying like, you know, have it in your brain and actively think about it. I think it's good to, you know, put it in the back of your mind and go and do something else, you know.
Yes.
And then it just kind of let your brain, you know, pick it apart, sort it into boxes, that kind of thing, and then and then you'll kind of sit down, look at it again, and it'll all kind of click into place.
Yes. See, that sublime moment of that happening is just wondrous, isn't it? And I have,
yeah,
but believe it or not, I have actually experienced that. Then my body of work might not reflect that yet. But no, I do feel that, yeah, there is much to be said for that walk or that longer shower or that long bath with a bottle of wine or two, three. No, what am I saying? But yeah, I think there's a lot in that, isn't there? Just giving time to percolate is wondrous. And I think with music, and I guess just if folks that I've spoken to before have said, you know, they've got specific themes for specific characters and have broken things down in that way. But how do you see the story as a musician? If you were to tell us that there was a picture in front of you to describe your musical process, what would that picture have in it?
A lot of chaos and synthesizers, I think. But I think, just kind of what you were saying about themes. I think having themes of certain characters is a really good way of going about it. But I think for me, at least, I focus more on tones and atmospheres and emotions,
yeah.
I think. Like, I really like using motifs, but I kind of go about them in a very, not disordered way, but it's very much like, "Oh, that fits there, I'll put it there," rather than thinking about, is this appropriate for this part in the story? But like, I love using motifs, and for the tower, it was mostly focusing on the music focused less on the characters and more on the story as a whole, which is, yeah, is a very kind of weird way of describing it. But like, there isn't like a Kiri theme, there isn't like a Chris theme, or even like a Tower theme. It's just, it all kind of blends together, and you've got these little motifs that appear every now and again, but they're not tied to a certain character, they're not tied to a certain thing. It's all this kind of big jumble, and it's all sort of there. And I think that approach, as much as I think it's slightly more chaotic and disordered, I think it allows the listener to draw their own conclusions when it comes to what the motifs mean to them. Yeah. For Middle Below, I did character themes, and that was a very good experience. But Middle Below is much more of a straightforward audio drama, and so it kind of worked there, and I think that definitely lent itself very well to that format. Yeah. And then for Dungeon Economic Model, I just took lots of classical pieces of music and crowbarred the main motif into them, which was possibly one of the most fun things I've ever had to do.
It's a glorious show as well. If you haven't heard that yet, jump in. But yeah, I must say, I think your sound design is sublime, and so just the right amount of what it needs to be. I mean, you know, I suffer from trying to put too much in, or the levels aren't quite, I haven't mastered mastering, and I'm not sure I ever will. But
I mean, I haven't mastered, but nobody has ever mastered mastering, I'm convinced.
I've mistressed it to pieces, but I'm mastering it. But yeah, I just think that if people are just yearning to gain good experience, what kind of first steps would you say to becoming better at sound design would you say they need to do?
I mean, so I think the simplest one is to kind of think visually, which sounds counterintuitive, but like, if you've got two characters talking in a space, I think it's important to try and imagine where they are and kind of think if there's any additional details that aren't in the script that you think might add something. Like my big thing is, if you've got two characters in just two characters in a room talking, and there's no description of any kind of sounds going on, I'll usually put like a clock in the room, or I'll kind of have something outside the room, like traffic or something, just to make a space feel more lived in. And I think that's kind of another way of looking at it, is looking at it as looking at it holistically, I guess, is probably the word. In that, you know, it's not the voices on top of the sound design. Like, the voices are part of it, you know? Like, you know, if you have two people talking in a room in real life, they're not talking separately from the room. You know, they're in a room, they're surrounded by sound. So almost thinking of the voices as a different, as another sound design element, to draw a really long-winded comparison. In physics, they've discovered this thing where, you know, there are certain particles that, you know, if you look at they technically exist in two states, but when you look at one, it changes the state. And they were kind of like, why does it do that? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, because the people observe it, like human beings observing something is in itself part of what's going on in the universe. You know, so it's like we're not separate from the world around us. We're not separate from all these processes that go on. Like, we're part of them. And you have to factor that into any kind of process. And I think it's the same with audio drama. You have to, and sound design, you have to be aware that, you know, you don't have that thing where you just stick an ambience under two people talking. It's like you've got, you know, where are these people? What's going on around them? They're part of this scene. It's not, they're not separated. It's all kind of smashed together. That was very long-winded. I'm sorry.
No, it made perfect sense, and thank you for sharing it, because I think it's key, really. Because I think the other thing that newer folks coming to this suffer from is that mix. And as much as the voices drown in the mix and aren't necessarily heard as they would be in that ambient space, and I wonder what tips, if any, you've got for folks to just make that dialogue not drown in that immersing space at all.
I think the best way to just learn that stuff is just to experiment and kind of see what, like a good pair of headphones will go a long way. And listening to stuff that you like and kind of, or even like, you know, I think the big thing that I tell people is like, and I think this is true of any artistic medium, is, you know, if you want to make something, say you want to make an audio drama, don't just listen to audio dramas, you know, don't just take cues from other audio dramas, like look at, like read books, play video games, you know, yes, watch lectures, that kind of thing, like, and find something from outside as a reference, as something to bring into to your story. And I think that's also true of mixing as well. I mean, what I was saying earlier is I kind of came from music. I have watched so many videos of people going through project files of tracks that they made. Like I used to have, when I was a teenager, I remember watching, it was like a half hour, it wasn't even a documentary, it was just a half hour video, and it was Brian May and a slightly uncomfortable audio engineer sitting in a studio and they kind of went through Bohemian Rhapsody and they kind of played every single track and like individually and kind of went, well, this is how they were recorded, this is how we made them, this is why we recorded it this way. And kind of looking at the sheets of everything that was recorded and then going through them and just explaining how it got made and explaining their process. And I think learning that, you just absorb it.
Stripping it back.
You just absorb all of it. And I think, and there are 100,000,000,000 tutorials on music production.
Sure.
Use them, you know? Like, I think... Yeah. Having a basis in audio and music production, even if you don't have a musical bone in your body, will help you, like, just learning the process, learning how the plugins work, learning how to mix vocals. Like, I still don't know how to mix vocals in songs, but I know how to do it in audio fiction. And then using that as a starting point and then finding out what's useful to you, find out what's not useful to you, which is why I still don't know how to mix vocals for songs, because I never have vocals in songs. And the way they're mixed would not work for audio fiction at all, because everything's really compressed, so it's just kind of like shoved to the top of the mix, and it would sound very, very punchy in an audio fiction setting.
Yes.
I think learning music production is the best thing to do, and, you know, joining music production communities and seeing what they do, hearing what they do, looking at work in progress and kind of learning that way.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause you yourself have also been astoundingly generous and out on Twitch been recently showcasing how you put together various things. I don't know if you want to share what you're doing there and how useful that might be to folks.
Well, yeah, so I stream on Twitch every Monday and Wednesday at time of recording. And what I do is I will either make a music track from scratch or I'll kind of open up a piece of audio drama that I've made and I'll go through the project file. Later on in the year, I'm talking sort of November, December time, I do want to start making an audio drama on stream from scratch. I've had the idea, I've got the script written down, I'm just getting it R&D'd. But the idea is that we will be making a audio drama live on stream, so you'll kind of get the whole process.
Wow, amazing.
Because I think...
What a great resource. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, well, I started streaming maybe about a year ago, and it was just because we hit a Patreon goal and it was something I said I would do. And initially it was kind of the standard Twitch thing, play video games and occasionally talk about the stuff that we're actually making. But then my computer exploded. Explode. The graphics card stopped working. I could still work on it, but it meant I just couldn't do anything too taxing.
Trauma.
But now I have a lovely, very big gaming computer, so hopefully that will last. I think since I started streaming, I've got better at what I do, and I think there's something to be said for learning in public, you know, having people watch your process. Well, yeah, there you go. I think if you're going to be a podcaster, I think that's something you have to come to terms with, is that you're going to be learning in public, because if
the stakes are open and
exactly
to see.
Like, if you're going to spend all you know, if you're not going to release anything until it's 100% perfect, you're never going to release anything, you know, like
Good lesson.
Tin Can, the first series of Tin Can, I didn't have like Isotope or anything like that. And the audio is a mess. Mm. You know, like you can hear my laptop fan in the background while I'm doing the vocal takes. And with, you know, and then with Middle Below, it was the first time I'd recorded like a group, like an ensemble. And yeah. We recorded it in an untreated living room. And as a result, the vocals are a mess on that as well. And that they're just very heavily processed. But at the same time, like, you know, that didn't stop them from being listened to and enjoyed. So I think it doesn't have to be perfect. And I think, you know, as long as you're okay with learning in public, if people say, oh, this doesn't work, and going, all right, okay, well, I'll do better next time. I think that's an important skill to have.
I love that. And can I say also, I think because the amount of time you spend on an edit, you're so close to it that something that you notice that's slightly awry, nobody else would probably even blink anything at. It's just that exactly. I think because you spend so much time right in the edit. And and I also want to note that in the last 5 years, there's been such a development of different tech to employ to help sound design, A, get easier to access, and B, to improve it, right? This quality of it. And I wonder if there's any things that you found that you can't do without at the moment.
The standard thing that I've kind of had for many, many years now is Isotope RX. Yeah. I'm sort of at the stage now where they'll send me like loyalty upgrades because I've been on there so long. But I think it's great that Isotope puts RX elements on sale at least like 3 times a year for really, really cheap, because they are indispensable tools. Like the denoise will change your life, you know.
Indeed.
And like it completely changed how I edited. It made everything so much better just being able to filter out background noise. That's probably the thing I stick on everything. And then I think if you can find a good compressor,
yes,
or take a compressor, you know, if a lot of programs have them included, and just learn how to use them, mm-hmm. a good compressor will get you incredibly far. Mm-hmm. The thing I've been using recently, and this is absolutely not something that everyone will need because it's very, very weird and niche. It's a what was it called? I think it's called Chip Sounds. Is that what it's called? Hang on.
Okay.
So it's called Chip Crusher. It's from a company called Plug. What it is? It's technically a bit crusher, but what it does is it also lets you emulate certain speakers. So it has a built-in phone filter, for instance, and it's not just an EQ. Super. It's like an actual, it like sends it through a circuit, like an emulation of a circuit that your voice would go through on an actual phone. So it sounds a lot more kind of crackly and realistic. They also have things like, they can have it sounding like it's coming out of an old computer. You can have it sounding like it's coming out of an arcade cabinet. Or like an old TV. Like there are so many different settings on this thing and so many different cabinets. And just as a way of adding texture and color to a voice track that's supposed to be coming out of a medium, rather than just putting an EQ on it and leaving it that.
Amazing. And you utilize that in your tower show too?
Not yet. Right? No, not yet.
You haven't? So all of those phone calls have been done how? Equalization?
Yeah, it's EQ, but also putting in a bit crusher, a different bit crusher, like a free one, just to add little artifacts and also just make the sound a bit harder. Because I think EQs are now at the stage where they're so good. If you put like, the standard phone EQ, you take the lows out, you take the highs out, and you just got the mids, it still sounds very clean.
Yeah.
And I think phone calls, you know, now still sound very clean, but I like adding a little bit of texture just to make it sound a bit full, a bit more kind of crackly. I think the key thing that I did with the tower, and I think a lot more people should be doing this when they're doing phone EQs, is putting sound design under the phone EQ as well. So, you know, you've got a scene where Kiri's on the phone and she's next to a campfire. The campfire will also be coming through the phone EQ on the same track. So you actually, it feels like Kiri is in a space rather than just being the sort of disembodied voice with an EQ on it.
That's such a key thing to, yeah, that may not even have crossed some folks' minds. Maybe it has. Maybe you're amazing. no, I love that. Well, I think it's about time we listened to some of your glorious works, shall we? So where do you want to start? What's this first clip from? And why do you think it's a great showcase of use of wondrous audio?
So I think, well, since we've been talking about the tower, I think we'll start with the tower clip. So this is from this clip's from the end of part one. So it's the kind of big finale. Mm-hmm. And I still maintain it's possibly one of the best pieces of audio that I've made. Just because it's meant to be this kind of big, you know, moment of confusion, but also this kind of big, breathtaking, epic kind of moment. There's a lot going on. And the music and the sound design really blend here to the point where you can't quite distinguish one from the other. Mm-hmm. And it's a good example of if you have everything as, you know, rather than having voices separate from sound design, it's a good example of what happens when you just smash all of them together and you kind of treat them as one holistic thing. And yeah, I think it's a very good bit of audio fiction editing.
Brilliant. And our two actors too, we'll talk about them afterwards.
Yeah, so, well, technically really three actors in this one.
Three,
yeah.
Yeah,
three,
yeah.
In this clip.
Okay, let's have a listen.
Go for it.
Okay, hang on. It's lit. It's beautiful. It's lighting up the darkness.
Anything moving?
Don't think so. I guess if they're that far up the tower, it'll take a while. Did you hear that?
Hear what?
Something's happening further up the tower. It sounds like a jamming cogs.
Okay. Hang on. I'll try. What are you doing?
Bonfire in the tomb. Why? What's happening?
The tower's just lit up. The whole thing. Machines in my office have started beeping and printing off reports. I thought they were all switched off.
Ike, what's going on?
I don't know. But whatever it is, the tower is awake.
Oh my goodness, my tummy is just so excited. It does evoke such emotional response. I do feel just the build and the epic feel of it. And I must say, I think you're one of the masters of perspective and changing perspective too. So yeah, performances too. Do you want to tell us who else was in that groovy clip?
Yeah, so the main voice was Katrina Allen, who plays Kiri in that clip. Chris, who was the voice on the phone at the beginning, was David Pellow. And then the other voice was Mark Galley, who plays Ike in the tower.
Yes.
Three fantastic actors who are also joined by the wonderful Sarah Golding as well in the cast of the tower.
She tries. She tries.
Honestly, like, so I'm gonna just take a moment to embarrass you in front of all your listeners.
Oh, no.
But the monologues that Sarah does for the tower are some of my favorite parts of the series. They're like the past two seasons that we've done, I've literally just had them playing with just some music underneath. Like, putting music underneath them is, and I don't know what it is, because I listen to the tracks that Sarah sends through, and I'm like, oh, this is good, this works, put it in the thing, and then I have a piece of music, stick the piece of music underneath, play them together, and it's heartbreaking. Like, I'm just like, oh my god, this is so, oh, I'm crying, oh no. And like, that has happened two seasons straight, and I imagine it's probably going to happen for the third and the fourth and however many we make. So
oh,
so
that's,
yeah,
very like, cool of you to say, but it's in the writing, right? It's in the writing.
Oh no, definitely performance. Like the like, because I write it and I'm writing it and I'm just like, yeah, this is fine. But it's, you know, hearing it with the music underneath, sticking it all in together here, and just, the performance is just incredible, Sarah. Oh,
like, that's very rude of you to say.
I know that Katrina and Pello and Mark say exactly the same thing whenever we talk about the tower, and whenever we've discussed it, like they've just said that, like,
stop,
the monologues,
no, stop.
The best part of it.
Stop it.
Better not edit this out. This is all staying in.
I don't know. It's a bit weird, isn't it, that when someone's nice. Because a lot of life is the void, isn't it, as a voice actor and a producer audio person. So any feedback is grand and worrisome. So, but no, just on the clip as well, I just think, yeah, that all of the facets of the ingredients you were talking of previously to make it exciting, and you're almost like getting closer to the speaker or whatever's playing. I suppose you can't get closer if it's in your ears already, but just leaning in to think, like, what's happening? This is just, and I think it's the pace of everything, I think, is key. Do you want to talk about pacing your audio fiction and how you can utilize that to make something more engaging and astounding?
Well, I mean, for the I don't think pacing is something I consciously think about. I think in the case of that clip we just listened to, I had the piece of music and I had all the sound design elements ready to go. So it was just kind of letting all of it breathe and kind of seeing where things worked. And like, I was kind of wanting to try and communicate the confusion that's going on while also, you know, making it still able to be understood. Yeah. So I think it was mostly just The tower is fun to edit once I've got the music, because then I can just sort of time things with the music, which is really, really good, and that's very, very rewarding as well. So I think because of the way that I edit, so I don't do vocal cuts and then sound design cuts. I kind of do it in one. Mm. So the best way I can describe it is I don't edit horizontally. I edit vertically.
Okay.
So rather than like I'll do all the vocals first. I'll kind of focus on one scene, get all the vocals from it, find the takes I like, chop them up, and then add the sound design as I'm going along. Mm. So it means that the sound design feels more kind of deliberate and present and in between the dialogue and the vocals.
Right.
And I think this is also a kind of a good example of that. But also as well, what I like about that clip is you've kind of got the massive machine in the background.
Yes.
And because I just sort of put it in and didn't really chop it up or anything, it was just making these random noises occasionally. And I think it just works really well. It definitely sounds like alive.
Yeah.
Which was a happy accident.
For sure. And I want to just jump on that moment you mentioned earlier about breathing space. And I think for me, something you do beautifully is letting that character dialogue have the breathing space to exist, to resonate, for you to think on. So many audio fictions, I feel, just rush, and everything is like the character speaks, next character speaks, blah, blah, blah. But I feel you let silence and pause have their own personality and well-deserved space in your storytelling. And I wonder, is that a conscious thing? And why is silence and pause so powerful?
I don't necessarily think it's true for all the things I make. Dungeon Economic Model doesn't have any pauses in it whatsoever. But I think having breathing space is important when it comes to dialogue, especially in audio fiction, because you've got to give your listener time to process what's just been said.
Yeah.
You know, like, it also, it's slightly more realistic as well. I know there's a story that William Goldman tells. I can't remember the specifics of it, but it was like this tiny moment in, I think it was Marathon Man, where somebody was talking to Laurence Olivier and somebody was meant to say something and then Laurence Olivier was meant to reply straight away, but it wasn't working. Laurence Olivier, it wasn't clicking with Laurence Olivier. Mm. And it wasn't until he kind of said, look, like, there needs to be a pause for my character to think of a response and to process what's just been said, to kind of process the news that's just been told. Mm-hmm. So, and then they put the pause in and it worked first time. Yeah. So, and I think that story's always kind of stuck with me. And I think it's, you've got to remember that these are characters and they're not just mouthpieces. You know, they'll hear something and you've got to, they're going to take time to process it before they say things. And I also think it's kinder on the listener as well, because I mean, so I don't know about you, but like, if I'm listening to audio drama and I'm doing something else, a lot of the time I'll go, whoa, hang on a second, what was that? Whereas I think if you're if you're just leaving a bit more space in between things, it gives your brain just a chance just to take it in before it needs to start taking in the next thing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So I think a lot of it is kind of consideration for the listener, but then also kind of consideration to characters as well. And it lets the dialogue breathe a bit more, it lets the performance breathe a bit more, and then it also allows the listener a bit more time just to process everything. Mm. I think that's probably just a natural thing for me. I'm not sure it's a conscious thing, but it's definitely, I think it's just a natural part of how I process stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I think it's glorious, and I think, you know, more people should perhaps, if they're not already, think about that aspect of the story being important too. Which I think leads us to gloriously our next amazing story. Let's have a little delve into Middle Below, shall we?
Amazing, yes.
So yeah, why have you chosen this clip to showcase today? What's it groovy in audio that it showcases?
So this is the start of episode 4 of Middle Below, and what I like about it is that it takes the idea of shifting perspectives, or shifting scenes rather, in audio, and kind of shows what you can do with it, because there's quite a few quick changes in this one, but they don't feel very quick. And they don't feel, at least I don't think they're confusing. Nobody's told me that they are. But yeah, it's this idea, I feel like this clip demonstrates the perspective shifts you can have in audio that you wouldn't necessarily be able to have anywhere else, or in other mediums.
Let's have a listen, you lucky folks. Are you ready? Strap in.
I want to tell you of a traveller. Not a traveller of oceans or mountains like in other stories. He never travelled very far. And he always returned to the same curious little home where he had always lived, with his curious little ghost friend and his curious little habits.
That's a funny-looking jumper.
Is that a Star Trek?
It's a Picardigan, okay? And I like it.
I feel like you gave it that name.
Nope, that's genuinely what it's called. I'll show you the tag when we're done. Shall we?
Oh, hello, Neil.
This was a traveller who walked the lines between this life and the next. The grey mist between existence and... Who walked between this life and the next through the grey mist of existence. Yeah.
You want anything from the shop?
What? No, I'm good, thanks. Actually, could I get... Actually, no, never mind.
Okay.
Alex?
Yes?
Could you get me a pack of cigarettes, please?
Are you sure?
Yes, I know, I just need to clear my head, that's all.
And nicotine and tar are going to do that?
Yes.
Okay.
Wow. Neil, no.
I'm still not over Picardigan. That's just glorious.
So this, like, people think I made that up. I didn't make that up. I was at a Star Trek exhibit in Seattle, of all things. Okay. I didn't go to Seattle for the Star Trek exhibit. It just happened to be on while I was there.
We wouldn't judge you.
no, I would judge me. They had a section on like merch, and they had a Picardigan. It was called a Picardigan, and I thought that was very funny, and I wanted to put that in something. But now people seem to credit me for it, and I'm like, no, I didn't come up with this. Like,
I want one. Make it so. Never mind. So yeah, I just love that, and obviously, yeah, there's a lot, as you say, going on there, and there's actually quite seamless transitions into different realities, really, isn't it? I suppose. So, do you want to talk us through what different frames of reference we've got in that scene, if people haven't picked up already?
So I kind of wanted, with this episode, the kind of idea was I wanted a sort of deliberate narrator, uh-huh. and Heather's one of the characters in the show, but this was the first time where we had actual narration, and I kind of wanted to explore the idea of like the space where the narration happens. So that's why, you know, like, you know, you can hear Heather's cat, and you can hear sort of other things, you hear the typing, and then also you've got the sequence with Alex, who's Heather's flatmate, and that's all the interaction with Heather and Alex I really like, because it's me doing my kind of goon show bit of trying to do slapstick on the radio, where you've got kind of physical comedy, adding sort of like, it's just one sound effect, but it just adds a little bit of extra rhythm to the scene, and kind of allows the conversation to, and I think it communicates a bit of Alex's kind of personality as well, which I think is interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I really like the idea of this episode of having the story that Heather is telling, but then also having this other story going on in the space that Heather is writing the story in. Mm-hmm. A lot of that came, and again, that's the thing that sort of happened in the edit. There were conversations with Alex in the script, but okay. the sort of bit with the door, and that was a later addition. And then also the fact that you got to hear Heather's cat. That was,
yes.
Genuinely, that came in, I think, halfway through the edit, because we were recording episode... Yeah, that's what it was. We were recording episode one as, like, the last episode.
Yeah.
And then Charlotte ad-libbed a line about having a cat called Neil. And then we thought, well, in episode four, why don't we record some lines of Heather interacting with Neil, and then also recording some Neil sounds.
Yeah.
So that was where that kind of came from.
Gosh.
And it just makes... It makes everything feel more lived in, and then also adds in these little extra, you know, these little things you can put in the spaces, just to give the scene a bit more movement and give it a bit more personality, which I think is what makes it kind of notable for me, at least. And then you've got this kind of piece of music underneath, just tying all these little scenes together.
Yes.
So yeah, I think it works nicely as an example of what you can do with audio.
I think it's glorious. And you should binge the whole season. If you haven't, you must. And if you have, listen again. So yeah, and now let's dip into some folks law, shall we? This is a collaborative thing that came out, was it 2 years ago now?
God, I think, so the pilots came out in 2019,
okay.
I think.
Gosh.
And then,
I lost a year somewhere.
I mean, I think we all did, Sarah, let's be honest. I can't imagine where. But we made three episodes as like a pilot, and just to kind of see if it would work. And then the team at In the Works got funding to make a full season.
Yeah.
And the season, like, I really love working on this show, because so it's, first of all, it's like a queer horror anthology.
Yes.
The writers are all poets, and they kind of come at it writing from a very, very interesting angle. Mm. And also, when it came to, you know, after when we did the pilot episodes, they didn't quite know how audio fiction worked, but then they definitely got like a taste for it.
Sure.
Because then when we came to do season one, they had all these really wonderful, weird experimental ideas.
Awesome.
that I loved doing. Like, I love working within the works on folks though, because there's a lot of the time where they'll kind of go, oh, I kind of want an episode that does this.
Yeah.
And then we'll kind of have a discussion about how we would do that in audio. Like in season one, for instance, it's not the clip that we're going to be listening to, but in a different episode, there's the kind of framing is that it's like a conspiracy Tumblr blog,
okay.
Basically.
Yeah.
And we kind of thought, right, well, how are we going to communicate images? And so we came up with this idea of, why don't we use alt texts on images to tell some of the story? It's one of my favorite things that I've ever done, because it does that thing that the clip I'm going to show also does, where you kind of have the audience as observer.
Uh-huh.
Like the audience is very consciously observing or listening to what's going on.
Yeah.
Like in that episode, you hear kind of a computer switching on at the beginning, and then you hear clicks, like mouse clicks, selecting different posts and selecting different images.
Yeah.
And you kind of get a similar thing with the clip that I'm going to show. It's from episode three. And as soon as Bibi, who's the writer of this episode, as soon as they told me the concept behind this episode, like, I got very excited, because the idea is it's a series of CCTV cameras that have gained like a little small amount of sentience and talk to each other.
Oh my.
Oh, I had so much fun, Sarah. Oh my goodness. And this is kind of the beginning of that. And I wanted to kind of demonstrate the beginning of it, because the first minute, it's a bit of a longer clip, but the first minute, there is no dialogue. It's just sound design. Right. And then it's kind of trying to communicate what the concept of the episode is without explicitly spelling it out.
Make us work. I love it.
Yeah. And also it's just very experimental and I love it very much.
Oh, we need more. We need more. Brilliant. So here's your inspiration if you need it, folks. Enjoy some folks lore.
Hallway. Empty, empty, empty. Window, dark. Floor, old carpet marked with shuffled feet. Hopeful company. Midnight rush.
Did you see 9B last night?
Hush. Elevator, closed. Functional. 9A, inside. 9B, inside. 9C, out the door. Cornelius, status report on 9D.
9D is inside. 9D is always inside.
Ellie?
Elevator empty. Should have seen them last night, though.
Who's this?
Oh.
It's her.
9B. A visitor exits. Effortlessly wears a messy dress that carries yesterday's creases. Waves, then shuts the door. Breaks out a phone. Walks through the hall. A finger chewed at its tip depresses the button for the lift.
The elevator roars awake. Ground floor to 9th. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Doors open. A short person stands, unaware I'm here, engrossed in a pixelated conversation. Elbows the button to go down, frowns, open a bag in pursuit of something, something, a chapstick. Brings to the lip, then smacks. Elevator going down, down, down. Elevator stops. Doors open. Lobby is empty.
Footsteps. Clack, clack, clack. Echoing through the space. Empty at this time of day. The caretaker isn't awake and the landlord is away. Thankfully. The only people here are the two of us. Looking up, staring right at me. Thumbs up. A smile made for the camera. 9B is a sucker for smiles. It fades. The double doors receive a cold handshake. Pushed open, then discarded. Fall shut. Footsteps. Click, clack, out of reach.
Gone.
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 Hallway. Empty. 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 Window. Dawn. Floor. Old carpet marked with shuffled feet. Comfortable heels. Morning after. Elevator. Closed. Functional. 9A. Inside. 9B. Inside. 9C.
Yes, glorious. Really,
I love
really.
That episode so much. I had so much fun making that one.
Yeah, and just the personalities of all the different gently commenting sentient beings. It's just glorious. And I think as well with that, you know, the finesse of the choices you've made with regards to sound design, it's very concise, isn't it?
Yeah, well, like, I think the challenge of that episode was communicating what was going on.
Yeah,
I think that was the big worry, was trying to get that to work, and I think that was something that I think we were all a little bit anxious about. But I think the framing device of, again, sort of audience as observer, but then kind of listening back to it, it's more that you are the audience is an observer with someone or something else. And I think that's something that I enjoy when I hear it in the sort of found audio genre, yeah, where the story kind of makes a bit of an effort to kind of let the audience kind of think like, okay, who is listening to this? Yeah. I like that as a way of creating a bit of extra bit of tension,
yeah,
or an extra bit of intrigue. And that's kind of what this episode is about. The episode's all about observing and being observed, and I kind of wanted to try and bring the audience into that and make the audience a part of that,
yeah,
because you know later on in the episode you hear, you know, the tapes being fast forwarded. You've got a little bit of it there kind of being rewound and fast forwarded to different moments in time,
yes,
and hearing different moments in time and trying to piece them all together, and then at one point towards the, it's a little bit of a spoiler, but then towards a little bit towards the end, the person who is, you know, going forward and backward through these tapes gets up and leaves the room, but you're still, you know, sitting, listening to what the cameras are saying.
Interesting.
I think what I liked doing with that was playing around with this idea of like putting the audience in almost as a character, like you are part of this,
yes,
story. You are observing this. You are, you are a part of this story in a way you don't quite understand yet. I like doing that. I kind of did that for Tin Can as well. There was this idea, yes, of listening to logs and things, mm, and then the logs kind of going into the story. But because I kind of went in not really planning on turning it into anything, I don't think that ever got resolved. Whereas in this episode, it does. So listen to this first.
Yeah. Oh. But no, I love that. And as a drama teacher, I've often worked with kids on devising and said, okay, yeah, who took that picture? What is their perspective, mm, and all that? So is that very much that perspective on things, isn't it?
And yeah. I just want to be clear as well. I'm not. It's different from the standard found audio thing where it's just like, well, is this thing on? Like explaining, sure, why it's being recorded, because, yeah, that's something I really don't like.
Yeah, I agree, and I think more people have become, dare I use a word like woke? I just did to that. That yeah, it's there are better, more effective ways of playing with the audio than saying, okay, like, press play.
I think it's still a valid kind of way of telling a story, but I think a lot of, I think Ella Watts puts it really well, being like, you know, when you watch a film, people don't explain why it's filmed.
Yeah.
You know, and it's yeah, the same. Exactly. It's the same thing with, I think when a lot of people write radio drama or audio drama, they feel they need to have to explain why it's a radio drama, why it's an audio drama. Well, you don't have to do that. Yeah. Just go for it, you know?
No, you touched on that. And I ran a course. I wrote a course for Lipper, which I ran up there a couple of months ago with students who want to be potentially voice actors and all sorts of other actors. And part of the course that I ran was, let's create a piece just with sound. And I don't see many people doing that and releasing that as a whole episode, you know, mm, not necessarily, you know, half an hour of just the sound story, but you know, even just short microfiction pieces of just sound would be glorious to listen to. So please, if you're thinking of challenging yourself, I would love to hear your only sound stories. Perhaps a little dialogue, maybe I'll allow you 6 words. But no, I just think, you know, since the Andrew Sachs glorious only sound piece, I don't
the
know
revenge.
If I've heard,
yes, I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, I don't think I've heard many that are just through sound effect. And the students at Lippert were amazing. And I need to get permission to be able to play some of those, because some of those are just glorious sound pieces.
Unwell does a lot of that, I
yeah,
think.
Actually,
Unwell's a really good example of
longer periods of, yeah,
longer periods of sound design without any dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
I think the closest I get is I've got episodes of The Tower that are just a piece of music. But I feel like that's kind of cheating as well. It's not sound design, it's music.
It's just
a music piece.
Yeah, well, as I say, I mean, I think when we talked about making the show, I have very much said that for me, the music is very much a character of its own too. So, mm, so it's just speaking in melody and music rather than words.
Yeah, so it's technically dialogue. It doesn't count.
It is. It's fine. Another exciting adventure to your ever-growing list of brownie guide badges. I don't know what is... it's the wonderful Doctor Who Redacted theme tune. Are we allowed to play it on here? Would we be allowed a slice?
Probably no. Not, but at it. The same time, I mean, I won't tell anyone if you don't.
Oh, I don't know, I don't want to get in trouble. But yeah, how on earth did that glorious fun come about? And did you have the best fun?
So okay, so the how it happened was, again, it's luck and networking, really. Like, I was very, like, my good friend Ella Watts. Well, talent is the small part. I was very lucky in that the producer, one of the producers of that show was Ella Watts, who's a very, very good friend of mine. And I've worked with her on quite a few things. And, yeah, she got in touch. So she kind of told me about the series when it was being written and when she was trying to get it off the ground. And I thought, this is really cool. She messaged me one day and was like, do you have any music that would work for like a comedy horror audio drama?
Right.
And I kind of said, well, I've got the music for Middle Below. I could send that over. Yeah. Thinking I was like, well, the music for Middle Below was heavily influenced by Doctor Who. So if it's about Doctor Who, that's probably my best shot. To which Ella went, oh, it's okay. I sent the head producer your SoundCloud.
Oh, wow.
The most recent thing on that SoundCloud was a track I made out of samples of my cat snoring. So I was like, oh, well, I guess I'm not getting that job then. But then I got it. They asked me to make a theme tune and a Doctor theme for Doctor Who Redacted.
I mean, wow.
Which
that's immense.
Was very much a dream come true. Like, it was quite a tight turnaround just due to deadlines and timings and things.
Yeah.
So I had to do the whole thing the whole thing was condensed into like 3 days.
Wow.
But I said this in another interview recently, like, I think because Doctor Who was such a big part of me growing up.
Oh.
Because it came back in when I was like 12 or 13, I think. So like I was, you know, prime audience.
Yeah. Yep.
It meant that, you know, somebody said make some music for Doctor Who, and it just sort of spilled out very, very quickly.
Amazing.
And it was a lot of fun, and it was quite gratifying, because I think so much of the time, you know, you kind of go, right, I'm going to make a thing and it's going to sound like this, and then you make it and it doesn't sound like that.
Yeah.
Whereas this, it sounded exactly how I was hoping it would sound, and everything I tried worked, it was just this very sort of, it was a big confidence booster. Going, no, I can do these big projects. I can work on something as big and as scary as Doctor Who, and hearing it in the show and.
Yeah.
Just seeing people online talking about it, yeah, as part of Doctor Who has been wonderful, and kind of being a part of a very rich history of musicians and sound designers working on the show.
Yeah.
And me just in very small letters at the bottom. I'm on the Doctor Who Wiki, Sarah. I'm on the Doctor Who Wiki now. I can go home. I can quit my job.
Life. This is tick. Done it. No, it is glorious though, because I mean, you know, underlined, you are a hugely talented musician and creative all-rounder, I do think, and also your friendly, affable positivity. You know, I don't think I've ever seen a negative ion come from you.
Oh, I don't know. It's out there. It's definitely out there.
I don't know. It's being buffeted by the positrons, whatever they are. Just made a new thing up that we have. But yeah, I just think that, yeah, keep doing what you're doing. It's all just glorious. And if you haven't heard the wonderful Doctor Who Redacted from Ella and all the team that made that happen, just listen for David's music alone. It's glorious.
But anyway. The music is on YouTube. If you want to just listen to the, like, it was funny. I was on YouTube and I found somebody had like ripped the music from the podcast episode and put it
up. Really?
Which was like, I know a lot of people are like, oh no, that's stealing. I was like, oh amazing, they liked it enough to steal it. Incredible.
Made it. Someone
made me very happy.
Amazing.
Exactly. But then I was just like, okay, I'll upload like a full version like properly, so you know, people don't have to like rip it from the podcast episode. But yeah, it's been wonderful. It's been a wonderful experience.
All right. Well, I hope many more groovy things come your way. And I have to say as well, I think there's a saying someone told me when I was working in theatre. She says, what does she say? Kind of get the quote exactly. It was something like, you have to be kind and lovely to everybody you meet, because you may meet them when they're on their way up and you're on your way down.
Yes.
So I think just forming some really good, positive relationships could be good for who knows what adventures in the future, right? Hurrah.
Yeah, it's a, there's a, I think the Glasgow version of that is you take people as you find them. And that's always done me very, very
and
well.
And leave them there. Yeah, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't move them. Just take this.
Which brings us gloriously to our quick fire quiz of audio awesome. Are you ready, David, for 5 questions all to do with audio that you have to answer in 30 seconds or less?
Oh, no, but go for it.
Okay, dramatic music, go. Question 1, sound effects. Where are the best places to go for everything?
Free sound is a good resource, but I would highly recommend that you learn how to do your own sound effects, because then they're more yours and they are unique from any other sound on the internet. So it means that the production is just a little bit more yours, and it also has a bit more of your voice on it as well.
Love that. Question 2, what is your, do you feel, greatest achievement in sound creation so far?
Definitely the tower. I think that is kind of... it's what I want to do. It's the kind of story I want to tell. It's the kind of sound I want to be doing. And it's also allowing me to be fully expressive without feeling that I need to conform to a certain way of working or telling a story.
Hooray for celebrating your celebrations. I think we should all make a sound to celebrate that, including our audience listening in Mexico and Sweden and America and wherever else you may be. Let's have a glorious celebratory sound after 3. 1, 2, 3. Woo!
Ooh, thank you very much. I think I heard that.
That's so loud. I've gone deaf in one ear. Question 3. What is the most astounding Foley effect made by you, something that you wouldn't expect to make that sound?
So I made a thunder sound once, and basically I had a sheet of metal that I took off my desk because when I was breaking it down to get rid of. And I gave it a wobble, I've just come up with a better example. Oh no!
That's okay. You still got 15 seconds left.
Right. So there's a plugin you can get called a frequency shifter, and if you put it on stuff, it makes really, really interesting sounds. It's how most anime sound effects are made, and it's completely changed how I make sound effects.
Amazing. What is it called?
It's just a frequency shifter. Oh. Like it's a type of plugin. You can get free versions, you can get paid versions. They're really good. I'd get one if you're a sound designer.
Amazing. Thank you. I need one for my voice. I want to sound lower. Question 4. How many keyboards is too many?
That's a trick question. There is never too many.
Damn it, he knew.
The best thing you can do is get one and then learn how to use it completely. Learn the ins and outs of it. And really get to know one, because then once you've figured out one, you can figure out all of them. That's the
love that. And we haven't talked about them so much today, but question 5, how do you get the best out of your voice actors to rinse the script for material with gloriously engaging mood and intention?
Speak to them all individually about their characters before you go to record, so they kind of come in with an idea of where they're coming from and the angle they're going for. Also allow them creative input. If they think something isn't working, listen to them and don't tell them no. Listen to your actors, trust them, and also give them space to explore their characters before you go into record.
I love that. I'm going to do all that, I promise. And what quote, as a bonus question, because you've got everything right so far, what quote should folk have carved in wood, blood, or in a musical stave before them to inspire them to create every day?
So I don't have quotes, but I can recommend you some books. If you read Sound Poetics by Sean Street, if you can get a copy of that, that's a very good exploration of what sound design does and how it works in the brain and how the brain processes audio. Anything from the 33 and the Third book series, I have the Super Mario Brothers soundtrack. Basically, it's a series that goes into how albums were made. I've got the Super Mario Bros. And Switched on Bach. Also, Neil Gaiman's View from the Cheap Seats. It's a collection of nonfiction. It's about writing and creativity. There's also a lot of stuff about comic books, which I think is also incredibly useful for telling nonlinear stories for audio drama creatives. So I think learning about comics is also a really good thing you should do.
And there are more popping up, actually, to do with and alongside and complementing audio fiction shows, including Oz9, which you can get the first copy of now. I'll put links in the show notes. But yeah, I thank you for that. You've passed with flying colours the beautiful audio quiz of audio joy. And well, all I can say is like hearty, hearty thank yous for everything you shared today. And I guess like with every episode, really, what would be your parting shot of advice and wisdom that budding creatives should hear, and or people who are got themselves to a certain level and want to push the boundaries of what audio can do even more? What would you say to them?
I think it's very important to play. I think this is something that can get lost if you're doing something professionally, but play is incredibly important. It's how we learn things. It's how we figure stuff out. It's how we find what we like. I think in everything that you do, there should be an element of play. In every job that must be done, there's an element of fun. You should try and find something in everything you make that makes it fun and you can play around with, I think, because then you'll grow with everything you make, but then also it'll never become stale, it'll never become repetitive.
I love that. So there you go, jump in, have the best fun you can, because in a way that's what life's about, isn't it?
Apparently.
Allegedly. Brilliant. Well, thank you again, and I hope that your next audio adventures are your best yet. I very much look forward
thank you.
To what
Me
comes
too.
From, yes, from the Tin Can Adventures. And yeah, thank you so much for coming on Indie AF. Take care. Bye-bye.
Sorry, I thought that was the finish. I didn't realise I was supposed to respond to that.
Time there was an ocean.
The smuggler, I've heard about you.
You're a long way from home again, Miss Gray.
You are charged with treason against the pirate code.
I've had enough of this.
Throw her overboard.
Not until I've seen the captain.
Sickness.
Exactly, he has a sickness. Only Payne's kiss can save him now.
We must be wary of sea magics.
Tales of fishwives. Press on.
We could just leave. That's always an option.
Journey you must to the stupid woods.
Oh, hello there. Yes, I am Stuart.
The name's Reggie.
It is what it is, Ken.
A new barnacle, you know.
The trio began paddling in the direction of Wild Hollow.
Artemis!
Here we go, then.
The Chronicles of Wild Hollow. The Grey Trilogy. Streaming now wherever you get your podcasts. Set sail on a brand new adventure.
Whoops, woohoo! What did we do? We shared Pod AF highlights with you.
Oi!